out of you?
No, I'm really relaxed on guns today.
We're all talking while the music is playing because we're so excited to be together.
That's right. The gang is back.
I know. Happy lucky Friday 13th. The gang is back together. I feel like it's been a few weeks since we've all been in the same room at the same time.
It's been so long.
It's been too long.
I know. And we're all catching up on what's happened. My daughter graduated from college while I was gone. Thank you. Very exciting. I feel very old, though, because at some point you can't lie about how old you are once you have a college graduate. Yeah. Unless you have some weird Doogie Howser. And so.
And, you know.
I'm getting old.
Not that, for myself, I have a daughter who's marrying age, but she's not engaged or anything. But I am now at the age where I can be a grandparent, and that's kind of a threshold.
You're way
that's
past
kind of
that.
A
40
moment.
In Utah, you can easily be a grandparent.
I'll throw down on that. So I have a blended family, and I love my blended family until I point out that last year, Chris's middle son had a child.
So you are Grandma Mara.
I am. And so Grammy. I'm suddenly like needing to differentiate, even though, frankly, you know, I'm old enough.
Your grandma. Aw.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah, sweet.
Do you have a grandma name yet? Because some people want to pick it for themselves, but I feel like it has to naturally just happen.
I went with my grandma's name, which was Mama, because she was from New Orleans. And so
That's cute.
I'm Mama.
Mama.
Yeah. Mama.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Yeah, well, I'm not ready to pick myself a grandmother name just yet, so I'm going to wait.
It's not, yeah.
Yeah, but I think we're all officially in the category in Utah where we could have many grandchildren.
Yeah, in Utah, it could have been 20 years ago, I guess. Mm-hmm. We could have really been 38. In that window. Yeah, but those are those threshold moments where you can start to feel older.
Yes. Greg, what have you been up to since we haven't been hanging? Well, should we know?
Yeah, no, just... I've been busy, but I had a spring break that was a week earlier than you two. So I missed that. My scheduling was poor and I missed our
I know you
podcast.
Sent us pictures of eating ice cream.
I was in Beaver County. I was also at Cove Fort. They really built that fort well, those pioneers. They really planned that
sure
well.
Did.
They're, you know, these, you read about the American frontier and all these wooden forts where the Indians would catch them on fire. That thing's made of lava rock. There's no catching that fort on fire. They were ready for anyone and anything.
It's a
was
good
very
plan.
Impressive. I was very impressed.
All right. Look at you doing history and
so
learning.
If you haven't
I
been
like
to Cove Fort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weather's not great there.
The furniture is almost like a dollhouse. I mean, people were a lot smaller back then. Like, we have grown as a, you know, species
we're
since Cove Fort was all the rage. I mean, that stuff looks like, it literally looks like Munchkin land. But the fort's well fortified.
All right, that's good information.
I'm here to report.
And Mara's got her sexy voice here. Have you been busy? You've moved into your
very
office.
Very sultry.
Moved into the office. We've already downloaded on spring break. So now we're just, you know, we're in lacrosse season. Couple more weeks of school left, just living my best life. I am in a weakened state today, so let's judge how great.
That's why the voice is cold ridden. She's a super spreader in the
that's
podcast
right. I have
room.
Triple COVID, and I just thought I'd visit Greg today.
Yeah, all the funny. Important people are getting it. Now, by the way, governor, it's been announced. Now the Speaker of the House is getting it. Now you, it's
oh, Brad Wilson has it now too.
Yeah, it's COVID. A domino effect. All important people are getting it.
I would assume after there were some fairly big events this week that there were a lot of people at that. I mean, not. I think the whole term super spread event is kind of silly. But, when you go to things and you're sick, they spread. And I love that everyone's trying to pin down whether the governor made people sick or somebody else. And
exactly.
I'm like, virus is going to virus. Who cares? And it just doesn't
just
matter.
It's just a flu at this point. I don't even know why we're testing anymore. If you feel under the weather, stay away from everyone. Unless you're Mara.
Are
then
you judging me? You're judging me.
Yeah, now
she's
Mara,
healing,
yeah.
But she's in that leftover where you may have a cough for
where
two
I'm
weeks.
Not sick.
I just
but
don't
I,
know
yeah.
the point. Everyone's like, I have it. I have a scratchy throat. I'm staying away. It's just not.
Your hypocrisy
I'm so over
is
it.
Like dripping off of you right
hypocrisy,
now.
Hypocrisy, I'm over
you
it.
Sick,
I'm just over
you
it.
You get sick, you're hanging out.
I know, I'm sick, but I'm just saying, I'm over this whole COVID thing. I'm done with it. I don't want to test for it. It just put it in the category of flus. We're done.
Well, I think we're doing the payback thing for how much time we spend away from each other and wearing masks. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like there's people everywhere right now where I work with and at home and at school and everywhere you go that are sick, not necessarily with COVID, but just any run-of-the-mill nastiness
don't have
that
we
have.
Our gunk.
Yeah.
Builders
so
built
it's time
up.
To start licking doorknobs again, well, doing our best to...
Comedian George Carlin, and I would not recommend watching a George Carlin comedy skit if you hate swear bears. However, George Carlin had this hilarious skit about germs, and he talked about how as a kid he swam in the Hudson River, which was a river of... feces, and
garbage.
So he is.
Yeah,
he is
a
now
Seinfeld
immune.
About that.
He's now immune from every disease. He's now passed, but he was. He never got sick because he had everything. growing up swimming in that river.
All right, it's a good plan. Well, if you're listening to us, we hope you're well. And if you're not, we hope you're snuggled up with a nice blanket listening to our lovely podcast about some hard issues over the last couple of weeks.
Friday the 13th.
I know. I was dying last week because it was an insane week work-wise, family-wise, with everything going on. And Friday, our podcast day, was Cinder Hatch's funeral. I think it was a beautiful service. But we were live for 7 hours that day, so we could not podcast. And there was something big that happened last week. If you heard, the Supreme Court had a leak.
Yep.
Much like viruses are going to virus, leakers are going to leak. Looking back, right, actually, before we look back, because I think everyone at this point knows what happened with the Supreme Court, but they met yesterday in person for the first time since the leak happened. We don't know what happened behind closed doors, but we do know that since the leak has happened, that they've said that the marshal is going to get to the bottom of who the leaker is. We do know that they're going to release some more decisions on Monday. The question is, will this be one of the decisions, or will they hold off to when it normally would have been, which would probably be June, maybe possibly July? Greg, I'm going to start with you on this. Do we know who the leaker is at this point? It feels to me like there's not that many people to choose from.
Yeah, we've learned since this leak happened, unprecedented, by the way. I don't care what anyone says about leaks in the past or hat tips or whispers. This, nothing like this has ever happened before. A draft opinion from February brought out, printed in the Politico magazine for everyone to read. This is a violation of all of their processes, all the confidentiality, and people want to downplay that, or at least some do, and we shouldn't. We can't let this become more of a circus. We cannot let these institutions, with the important role they hold, be compromised that way. And I don't care if it's a Republican or a Democrat. I don't care if it's right or left, because we don't know who did it, but it cannot be acceptable. And it can't be acceptable that the consequence of that, as we're watching play out in real time, is the mobs forming, or the people, the protesters forming around the, you know, gathering around the houses of conservative Supreme Court justices. It's meant to intimidate or meant to try and convince them to change their vote because they're so upset with what the outcome is or what they're reading the draft to have said. It's all unacceptable. It's not right. There's two schools of thought. One is that the conservative clerks leaked it to help galvanize and keep the votes on, you know, on the side that they were at the time of January.
My brain can't wrap around that version, but I do know.
I don't either, but that's one version of it. The other one is that because the Roberts Court and Chief Justice Roberts has been very concerned about the legacy of the Roberts Court, and that he's called an institutionalist. It's one of the reasons why they say he did not overturn Obamacare, because it was the you know, premier legislation of Barack Obama, and he didn't want to be the court to overturn that landmark legislation. There's been other decisions where it has at least been narrated by court watchers that Chief Justice Roberts has been worried about the role of the Supreme Court in history and has not wanted to rock the boat too much. So the leak was meant, I believe, this is the other theory, to persuade that if you overturn Roe v. Wade, you are going to cause civil unrest like the world has never seen. So please, Chief Roberts, convince at least another conservative justice to switch that vote and to keep Roe v. Wade in place.
So, Mara,
that's what I think they're trying to do.
Which way do you think is happening? Is there something that makes sense in your brain where you're like, okay, this is why they did it?
You know, what's interesting is I agree with you all on that it doesn't intuitively feel like it would come from the conservative side. But one thing that surprised me is that Nina Totenberg, who is the NPR reporter that has covered the Supreme Court for like 30 years, she's, and I find her to be a reasonably straight reporter. She said that what the rumor mill was the conservative side. And I have to say, I was just so uncompelled by the conservative side. It didn't feel right. I will also point out that Greg and I agree on this. I think that I really hold the Supreme Court as the last bastion of neutrality.
Yes.
And I think that just because we, the pundits, call them conservatives or liberals or Democrats, or I think by and large there's an earnestness about their deliberation. And absolutely they have philosophies, absolutely. And I hope we're not seeing that eroding. I was disappointed that the justices beyond Chief Justice were sort of commenting about it. I hope they don't comment about that. I do hope, I'm a big supporter of Justice Roberts, in part because he really believes in decorum. He's known for building consensus. He's known for spending a great deal of time trying to craft something that has universal sides to it, even if it has a strong point of view. I don't think they're going to release it anytime soon. I hope they don't, because I think we have to stop the fervor for a minute. I think if it gets released, it just builds and builds and builds, particularly in the incubation that is the midterms.
The only thing I would hope is that the protests around the justices' homes would stop. Sure. If this is going to continue, then I think you just have to get this through, because I don't think that's acceptable. It's actually against federal law to attempt to intimidate, and you can decide whether that's an attempt to compel them to vote one way or the other. But we have federal laws that are supposed to protect
the judiciary.
That should
be the one sacred place we have in this world, you know, where you can go home to your family and it doesn't have to be your job. And I know that we have First Amendment rights, but that bothers me too. So the interesting part is, do we think we're ever going to, if the marshal inside the court figures out who it is, are they going to tell us who it is, or will we never know and we'll just move on?
I would like to think that we will find out who it is. And I will say, for the record right now, I don't care what side of the spectrum they come on. I am livid that this has happened. It's a disgrace. It's wrong. Yeah. And you want to talk about things that undermine our foundational institutions. What happened there is there's no version of it that's okay. It is wrong, and it can never happen again.
And I would agree with Greg. It is not hard to go on record of saying it doesn't matter to me who ends up being the culprit.
That's how I feel.
That this is a breach, and I hope it is dealt with universally.
Correct.
As inappropriate and unacceptable. And I have to imagine the justices feel that way as well.
I would hope so, because like we said, you know, when we go through the confirmation hearings, it always seems so right and left and so political. And I think the way that we deal with it in Congress turns political. But I think most justices, when they make it to the point where they're being nominated for the Supreme Court, they've come a long ways in their career. I think they take the law seriously, and they have different perspectives of how to use the law. But I think they take those decisions seriously, and I don't think they're going in there as a politician to make it, it seems to me, on most occasions.
Well, and it's hard not to conflate, but you can't conflate the issue that they're ruling on, Roe v. Wade, which clearly has layers and layers of controversy.
Yep.
You can't conflate that with the process of the court. And I think what we're speaking to is the process of the court. We need to be united on what we expect.
Now, my wife Krista says that knowing who killed Jimmy Hoffa and where the body is a higher percentage chance of finding out than who leaked that.
Yeah,
my wife Krista does not believe we will ever know who that person is. She laughs at the thought that we think
also
that
just
you could find
not
out.
To be too, but apparently the marshals have no investigative skills. I mean, like, I don't know that they're the right.
Yeah. No,
right,
they might have to call in
the
FBI or somebody, because sometimes investigating your own family is a hard thing to do too. And I've seen stories out there, too, and it's hard to know what to believe, but maybe the Politico reporter was connected and had been friends and taken pictures with a clerk there at the court. Who knows if that just happens to be something that happened and isn't connected, you know? So I hope they do get to the bottom of it, because to me it undermines, I think, a very important part of how our country runs and works and keeps.
Well, here's the question that'll be asked forever. What does that decision ultimately look like, and how much does it veer from the February draft, and then why? If it is a day and night different decision, then there will be some that think that they were rewarded for leaking that.
And
that
conversely,
document.
If it's the same, some people may say it was for the pressure. I
correct.
Mean, it is a bummer
isn't it
that
terrible?
This
isn't it
critical
terrible that
decision.
This is, yeah.
Yeah.
It
and
has
I
just
think
been absolutely bastardized.
More extreme than what you come up with at the end, because we've talked about John Roberts liking consensus, and so it seems to me that the justices would come together, and whatever comes out in the end would probably have a lot more of a fine-tooth comb that went through it, and
but
I
now
know.
If you do
but now
that
we're scrutinizing the change as much
yeah.
as we're scrutinizing
but now if
the
you
ruling.
If that had been its normal incubation, which I agree, Heidi, but now if you do that, it looks like, well, look, it was successful. We were by leaking it, well, we were able to moderate their position, and that it will lend credibility to something that's not credible.
And I think it is hard, because this is a ruling that I'm following closely and deeply care about, and I disagree with overturning Roe v. Wade, and so it is suddenly more complicated in an already incredibly complicated issue.
Yep. I don't think people will be able to take that decision, which, by the way, I do think that It's not a decision of abolishing abortion or leaving it available to everyone. I think that going back to the states will structure these things in a responsible way if the draft is anything close to what ultimately
so
comes out.
See, Greg and I both got our opinions in.
But here's what I am actually appreciative that we could talk about the process, because there's a lot of people that want to dismiss the discussion of process. They don't even want to talk about it because they think it's that we're taking the eye off the ball. No, that's a real serious issue in and of itself. And so I'm glad that we're speaking about that. On what they're going to decide, I think that is whether it's settled law and was even available to be overturned, or how the states are involved, or what that's going to mean going forward. Anyway, I think all that's fair game, but none of it are we going to actually be able to speak about in terms of its merit because of this process that's been violated.
Which is frustrating. And we should
we will talk about it, but there's always going to be these questions.
And Utah does have a trigger law in place ready to go, which largely bans, I think, what people would say personal choice abortions. When you're talking about rape, you're talking about incest, the health of the mother, and I think severe defects for a baby. Those are the instances that would be allowed in the law. There's definitely time to change it. It could go, you know, more extreme to one side or to the other. Other states have laws ready to go. And at the same time, we have other states ready to say, you know, they're willing to open up, I guess, tourism dollars, for a better way. I don't know how to put it. $40 million in grant money from California if people need to come to California for abortions. Amazon saying in every state in the nation they'll pay you $5,000 if you have to travel or have expenses for an abortion. So we're seeing a lot of interesting things coming out from states and from businesses, which I guess are probably shaping the conversation as well. Have you heard anything that makes you think, you know, this changes anything outside of the court?
No, I mean, it certainly doesn't change anything in Utah, right? I mean, we have made it a rule to sort of reiterate our stance on abortion for years and years. And I will say we always have left out, we have not, I'm knocking on wood right now, we have not gone into crazy town in terms of, I believe it's still restrictive. I believe it is the woman's right to choose. But I will say, I don't feel like we've gone into some really crazy stuff that I do think is going on right now that is just politics on top of politics. And you saw Governor Cox this week saying, hey, listen, the rule as written in Utah will suffice for our trigger law, and we have an expectation. I hope Utah, I mean, I think this is going to be a through theme for me on this podcast, but I hope Utah keeps out the increasingly crazy rhetoric at a national level and at least stays with sort of,
I think you can talk about from both sides. I think that these late-term abortions, which if you look at Bill Maher, he does the more left-of-center show on HBO. He came out with a statement that until this leak happened and he stared at Roe v. Wade a little closer, he was unaware that in most of the world, you're not seeing abortions in the ninth month.
And in the United States, we're not seeing abortions.
And we're not,
in
but
the
we do
month,
have it. So. We do have late-term abortions that are legal in this country.
But there's such a small percentage.
But I just don't want those. My point
Nobody
is, I don't think
great.
It's, well, actually, the former governor of Virginia was arguing absolutely for abortions.
No, he was arguing the
afterwards.
Right of women to define their
but
own.
I'm just saying, if we can just keep those late-term ones from being the case, I think we would join the planet in terms of humanity and doing
but
the Craig, right thing.
But, Craig, if that was the Republicans' position, I think you'd find consensus.
There is
I
consensus.
Think you can find, I mean, the
nobody
vast
was really
majority.
Arguing Roe v. Wade until they kept pushing the envelope later and later in the pregnancy.
No.
That's when I got back into
Don't
the issue.
Don't discredit the right here. Roe v. Wade is being overturned because of years of evangelicals who have used this as fundraising and used this as rally cries. Like, there wasn't a practical application problem.
Yeah.
This was turned into a movement.
It might be right, but I will tell you, I had looked at that as an issue that was settled, and it wasn't one of these big front burner issues as I was a public servant. Where it came back onto my radar screen and where I began to care about it more is I began to hear about the push for later term abortions. And I thought, my
was
gosh,
that
we
New
can't,
York? I feel
we
like
can't,
there was one state
it's
that
not,
was trying
the other
to push
side's
the button.
Not stopping. The other side hasn't stopped and gone settled. They're still pushing on and on and on, even after the birth of a child. And so I just, it got me pulled back into that issue because it seemed like the other side was pushing that envelope.
I'm never
even
gonna,
if it's extreme,
I'm
I
never
going to
buy
happened.
With you that the discussion happens on the extremes. The consensus in America is really there, right? It's in the 80s that people think there should be access
to
some.
I think the ruling
most people
will reflect
understand that a matter of viability and women's choices is, I think, pretty mutually agreed on. But this issue is being driven continuously by the extremes.
And the extremes, I think, continued in the Senate as well, because they're working for an effort to codify it into law. And if I read the law correctly that they had the vote on, it was kind of a preliminary vote, but it failed 49-51. Joe Manchin from West Virginia sided with the Republicans, but it seemed to me like it kind of just opened the door to all abortions no matter what at any week until,
I think,
you know,
this was a political
weeks.
Tactic intended to just keep people on the record, right? I mean, this was a political stunt.
It was extreme, too, I think. It was a little bit
if they want, yeah, I don't know. I always like to see, you know, them voting on something that would be realistic, and I don't know if that was it. So,
Agreed. Anyhow,
we're not going to solve the issue of abortion here, much like people like to think. This always drives me nuts when I read Twitter and Facebook. I've had to just walk away from it because everyone thinks that their tweet is going to change the other person's, you know, point of view. And so far in politics and issues like this, tweets rarely change people's minds. Maybe they do. I don't know.
No.
Utah GOP primaries are coming up dangerously close and fast. It is May 13th today. June 7th, I think, is the day that you can actually get your ballot in the mail. And so sometimes when you're thinking the primary is not till the 28th, that's way too far down the road because people can start voting when it's on their countertop. I like to let mine simmer and like get a few things spilled on it first, but June 7th is when it happens. All of a sudden, we're hearing about the debates, and Utah has a debate commission that was formed in 2013, and all of a sudden this week, GOP Chair Carson Jorgensen's coming out and saying, you know what, maybe we should be in charge of our own debates because it's only Republicans. We'd like to be in charge a little bit more. Does this make sense? Greg, you're going to have to hold off. We're going to let Mara go first on this. For Republicans to have some...
Greg on this and say, I
hope, oh, great.
I hope that Speaker Hughes shows up.
You won't even and know
not,
where I'm coming from on
and
this
not
one.
Cray Cray Town Greg shows up because I think this is insane. So here's a couple premises we just can't buy. The Republicans in Utah don't get a fair shake. That's been a problem. I mean, is there a problem that we don't have enough Republican discourse? So just on face, we're one of the reddest states in the nation. And so this act of, you know, oh, I won't get a fair deal. But what is more offensive to me is Utah has done a few things really right. And one of them I do think is vote by mail. We did it right. We always need to improve it, but we did it right. We actually do talk to each other. You hear stories of Speaker Hughes saying, no, I called the minority leader and we talked. We do talk to each other. We're
You're
small
to
enough to
me
know
into
each other.
With you by saying nice things.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
So the other thing is this debate commission is bipartisan. It is driven by many media outlets. Their executive director is a neutral person from the media world. Even their co-chairs are former electeds. And I just think the strength of this, it's a rare moment in which I do think it's valid. I do think there's an earnestness about it. I don't think there's bias. And the irony, too, is what he's objecting to is a primary election that only has Republicans in it. And so you're like, well, what were you going to ask one of
everybody's
them?
Everybody's Republican nowadays. I don't know if you got the memo, but they're everybody's switching over, remember?
But I just think this is another example of the party, the Republican Party, has let the RNC, the national stuff, gunk, just seep into Utah. And I'm like, just please keep it out. We are better here. And I think that the debate commission has worked. I think it is a bastion of sort of neutrality. I don't think any serious-minded person thinks that it's problematic. And I just ask that they keep it, they keep the vitriol and the rhetoric and the headlines away from this and keep the RNC
up. So
before you get a go, though, I want to ask you a specific question. Is this possibly coming from Republicans because they're trying to cover for any specific players or politicians who don't want to take part in the events?
Incumbents, perhaps.
Incumbents. Or is this really they have issues that they want on the table? Tell me what you think this is and tell the truth because we've got a lie detector.
It might be incumbent protection. You could cynically look at it that way. And I don't know. I'm not inside their minds, so I don't know. But is that a possibility? Yes. Here's the other one. Here's the other possibility. Of all the great things that Mara said that we do right, some of which, I will accept on the whole your premise that Utah does a lot of good things. Here's what Utah has not done right and has actually led to the cynicism that you're seeing. It's certainly within the Republican Party. When the Democrats don't want to put a Senate candidate up as a nominee and they want to get behind the independent candidate, when you see the mass recruitment of Democrats to please register as Republicans so that you can be in the in the stronger party and have more of a say. It is not unreasonable to think that the Republican Party, who has a platform, just like the Democrats do, and wants the party to stay closer to its platform and what the party is, starts to worry that an independent commission or something that they don't have an attachment to or help can create, help create the debate formats, the type of questions, there is an insecurity there because you're seeing in Utah this migration all to one party. I think that's a consequence to Democrats deciding we're going to actually reject. It's not that we're not going to find a Senate candidate. We're going to reject our Senate candidate statewide, U.S. Senate candidate. We're going to go with the McMuffin guy. But then we're also going
to
join the...
he's not even going to be in these debates,
yes,
right?
You add that, plus you add the recruitment to register as a Republican so you can vote in that primary as well.
So, Greg, and what they want to cut off is three Republicans talking to the electorate?
Sure, because they want to make sure that the questions that are asked are closer to the Republican platform and the issues that we advance and we're going to be advancing in our primary and into the fall.
So the suggestion is the commission asks non-Utah-based, non-Republican-based questions?
I want a chance to answer
my question. That's what you're saying, right?
Let me finish the whole point. Okay? Right. And I know it's a little belabored, but just hear me out. So you have some concern about that, and so they're squinting at and staring at the Independent Commission, Debate Commission, a little closer than they have in the past. I'll just say this. In 2020, when I ran, I participated in a Republican primary debate commission and had no problem with it. Didn't even think to complain, okay? So I don't think there's any problem with it. But the debate, I got to tell you, it was pretty vanilla. It really wasn't the barn burner. You know where the best debate happened.
Ooh, now you're just trying to flatter me.
I'm not. I am going to tell you that primetime KUTV debate was lights out. I don't think if anyone in Utah didn't see it, go look it up at YouTube. I'm telling you, it is to have Rod Decker and yourself ask questions, follow-up questions, even interview every one of those candidates prior and put them under the lights and ask them hard questions. There is nothing that I experienced in a campaign or a debate that compared to that. So what I'm saying is, protect the debate commission if you want. I would rather see some smart ideas on how to get debates on prime time. Let some journalists, let some others put a debate together like you did in 2020 for the gubernatorial race. I just think on quality. I don't think the debate commission is bringing us anything that's better than what we could get otherwise. And so I don't oppose the parties having some involvement, and I don't oppose the idea that we get away from that debate commission and start looking at some of the other sponsors of debates that I think have done an incredible
job. It's not either or. They're not saying I'll only go to one or the other. I mean, Heidi wasn't shilling for the Republican Party.
No.
She was just asking the questions she thought were relevant. And
Your premise is that
the debate commission is shilling for somebody that's not Republican.
No, I didn't say that. I just said I can see where there would be concern and worry about that. But that's one issue. But the other one is it's not doing anything that's It's vanilla. Get some debates that are real. Get some debates that actually get the fur flying.
They do a good job, but I think what the difference is, what we did is we sat down with each person, and each person individually had some issues that they dealt with in their careers that we wanted to get answers to, say, why did you do this? And just kind of dig into that, because I think that all matters on the resume. The debate commission, I think, does a great job. I don't think they're partisan, and I think they ask good questions, but I do think sometimes it doesn't get to the heart of...
They're generic.
They are generic, because instead of talking about the real issue that one candidate has or the other, they're trying to ask questions that are more general.
But I do think voters are hungering, and I think the best way to decide is hearing from candidates.
Yeah.
And it's only one forum. Some candidates don't do well in the forum, and that
I think unfair. I think ducking a debate is pathetic. I love debates, and I welcome them. I think that every candidate, I think that the harder the debate, the more prepared you have to be, which is what you want in your public servant anyway. So make sure it's a hard debate. I just think that it needs to really drill down on the specific issues of those candidates, and it needs to be better than the.
So you just want the debate commission to be tougher.
Are you buying into
the notion that somehow there's a bias?
No, but I read Republican Party Chair Carson Jorgensen's concerns and thinks that they ought to have some involvement. I do think
the
questions...
He knows nothing about this cycle, though.
I think the questions that should be asked of the Republican Senate candidates should... I think that their participation would not be a bad thing in terms of asking questions relevant to the party.
Why do you think he released this to the press instead of just calling the commission? Because as of Wednesday, he hadn't even spoken to the commission. The party just released this to the press. That seemed weird.
It does seem weird. I hope everyone shows up to their debates and debates. Yeah. I think the people of Utah deserve to hear from them. And I hope that there's more than one conversation. I know there's ones that go on in front of smaller groups and in different places. We've been trying to talk to candidates on the Take Two podcast with bonus episodes. But I do think that conversation is important because as much as we all like to think that we're involved, I know I personally don't have time to go to any of the meetings they're having in the park or go sit down and have those question and answer sessions. There's a lot of people who are so wrapped up in, you know, their lacrosse or their soccer or their momming and piano lessons that their only chance to hear from the candidates really is to listen to these debates. So I think it's important that they happen. So
the worst thing you want as a candidate, having speaking from experience, is your fear and the thing you fight against every single day once you get into a broader primary or general election, not the convention, caucus convention cycle, but primaries and general elections, is you don't want to be misrepresented as a candidate and you don't want to be misunderstood. If you believe that people understand what you're saying and they don't agree, there's something that makes you feel at least, if you don't earn their support, you understand that at least they rejected what it was you were trying to say. But but if you feel like you are being misrepresented or that you're misunderstood or you're being misrepresented, it's crazy. And so I think a debate gives you the opportunity to be understood and to not be misrepresented. But you better have a debate format that allows for that. And that's what I don't see a whole lot with the debate commission.
You are splitting the baby on this. You have no problem with the debate commission.
It's a nothing burger, that one. Get some good debates in there.
This was bad form of the Republicans.
I don't think so at all.
I will say it's the party. I want to be clear that it's not the candidates. Because you've had several candidates who are like, I don't know what they're talking about. I'm showing up at these debates.
I think
the
Republican Party.
And definitely the non-incumbents are itching to get their time on TV.
They are pointing out that they will be there on time.
The incumbents are probably like,
with all the games being played with what it means to be a Republican, I think the Republican Party is well within its right to want to be more involved in these debates because being a Republican is trying to be blurred by the Democrats right now.
Okay, I want to talk about what it means to be a Republican right now. So I've listened to several speeches.
Mara's a Republican.
I'm shaking my head.
Well, she may be. She switch when Jim DeBakis asked her to? I feel like
she does everything
true.
Jim
I
asks.
Don't do much that Jim DeBakis asks.
Well, I was listening to a speech, and I forget what speech it was. It was a couple weeks ago from President Biden, and I was listening to him. And if I were a PR person, I was thinking, okay, he's hitting a lot of great notes. He's really talking to the American people. He's a president for everyone. And then he started into the MAGA, but he was calling it MEGA and then MAGA and MAGA. He couldn't figure out what to call it. But
you can't mispronounce you're mocking.
Yes, but he keeps doing it, and it seems to be the choice that they're using leading up to the elections to talk about MAGA Republicans. And my question is, Mara, I'll let you go first on this one. Is this good PR? Because you kind of do PR for what you do.
Right.
Is it the right way to get people focused and excited about the election? Because it seems weird to me that you would be using MAGA when that obviously is connected to Trump.
Right.
And I would think that as a president, I want to talk about myself. I want to talk about what I'm accomplishing in my future, because the old president's not the president anymore.
So first and foremost, a backhanded comment I will give is no one out snarks Donald Trump. So just don't go into areas where people are experts. And Trump is an expert snarker. So just leave that.
I totally take that as a compliment to him.
I know you do. And I'm sure he does too.
And he is the MAGA king. So he's okay with that.
He just lives in this muddy world. And Biden's not good at it. Right? But first and foremost, it's a repeated mistake over and over because it doesn't, I think it doesn't scratch the itch that politicians have of wanting to scrap it up a little bit. But absolutely, the Democrats' only shot at gain here is to point out their achievements and to point out what they'll do. There is no gain in snarking at a guy who's not even in office. You might as well just put a sign up that says, you know, Trump owns me, because there's it's not a good strategy. And Joe Biden, I say, because he's lovely, can't do it well. He can't pronounce it well. It felt forced. What was interesting about it, sort of from a strategic technical background, is that he had his press people support that. They were like, yeah, that's the plan. Yes, we meant to do that. Do I think sort of Trump deserves it? Does it speak to me in terms of how I feel about Trump? It does, but it's the wrong messenger at the wrong time in the wrong way. So from a strategic point of view, it's bad. I think you're going to see the party apparatus hopefully continue to pound the Democrats about the fact that you all better lay out your record, lay out what you're doing, lay out where the gains are. And from my seat, they have some. They better start pounding it, because when the economy's bad, it's hard to be the person in office. But no, you can't outsnark Donald Trump, so don't try.
Yeah, and it just seems odd to me, too, because I think that, and maybe I'm wrong, I believe a lot of people voted for President Biden, maybe not because he lit a fire within their soul. They were like, wow, you know, he's the guy for the job. But I think they were thinking, he'll be fine. He's not President Trump. Maybe things will, like, be a little more chill on Twitter.
He was supposed to be the grown-up, right?
Yeah, and yeah. I think that maybe if you voted for him thinking, okay, we've got the adult in the room, mm-hmm. you're like, why
it's
are you
doing this?
It's
against brand, right?
Yeah, like, so like, it just seems weird. So I don't know.
Well, the other part is, I mean, when he was elected, I think one of the first messages he attempted to convey was, this is America. Okay, we've had an election. It's been a tough one, but we're going to come together. And he was known in Congress. There were a lot of people that were arguing against supporting Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders because they felt like Biden was the adult in the room. He was the one that could bring people together. And when he was elected, you heard that kind of message coming out. Now, both Donald Trump and Biden, Trump was in the 70 million something votes. Biden's at 81 million. Those are both, the totals for both of those candidates are more than any winning presidential candidate has ever received in American history. To whole cloth, take everyone that voted, the 70-something million people that voted for Trump, or to suggest that they're all MAGA crew and that they're the most violent and dangerous people in modern American history, with some of the violence that we see going on and everything else, it is a statement that is an exaggeration. It's not true, and it has the effect of alienating 70-plus million voters, which isn't on brand, as you described it. It's not appropriate. It makes you feel like this is a president who's advanced far enough in age that he's given talking points, he's given things to say, and it's not the same guy he was back when he was in the Senate.
I don't think you feel it. I mean, I'm not quite feeling that.
I think it is interesting that
if you watch the tape and you watched the sentence before the first manga or whatever he called it, yeah. before the first insult, the sentence he was putting forth, which he did pretty powerfully, was about the fact that there was a deficit increase every year with Trump, and he brought it down by 350 million or billion or whatever his thing was. Yeah, but billion. The thing is, none of us know that because the news cycle just has grabbed this. So while he was making a case for Democrats, because he also decided he would do this little stunt, we aren't even talking about the case he was trying to make for Democrats.
Yeah, and I think we'd all way rather at this point be talking issues than just talking, you know, talking smacking points. Because when I read even some of our local politicians who are running right now, they have a lot of snarky tweets about we got to fix this or this is broke, like just like nasty things about everyone likes to retweet because it's cool to retweet. But I'm like, okay, well, where do you stand on the issue and how are you going to change this and how are you going to make it better? And that's the conversation I want to hear right now, and I want to hear it coming up to the next presidential election. So to me, it's slightly frustrating. I'm just like, come on, guys. Yep. All right. Speaking of more bad news, we've been waiting for...
It is Friday the 13th. I know. So I guess it's the right the time to bring
But the
it
good
up.
News is with bad news, there's always somewhere that we can go that's better. But the CDC has started releasing some of their preliminary numbers from the last year. And there's been bad news on multiple fronts where I think people have been worrying that it might be like this, but not knowing until the numbers actually came out. But overdose deaths, 107,000, those are the provisional numbers from 2021. That total translates to roughly one U.S. overdose death every 5 minutes, and it's a 15% increase from the previous record that was set the year before, which was the original year of the pandemic. So the numbers were going up already, but increasing to go up more. And at the same time, we're seeing gun deaths jumping, but much more significantly, by 35% in 2020, and that's a 25-year high. The CDC right now at this point is saying that there's some things that need to change. They say that we need more housing assistance, child care subsidies, tax credits, green spaces. This is their prescription for the problem. But the problem is we have these problems. Greg, I want to start with you. I know because you guys can get along so well on the issue of guns.
No, don't even say it out loud. It's just, I know. I'm within arm's length of her, and this is an issue she cannot speak about.
Is this just a gun problem, or is this connected?
It's not a gun problem. I hate guns. I just want to outlaw them. Every time I'm sitting within arm's length of Mara Carabello, I hate guns' guts, okay? I just want that on the record.
Thank
that anytime
you,
I'm near you from now on, I don't even like guns because I can see your hand, and it's too close to my head, so I will not even go there. I'll tell you this. This is the sad part. There's not going to be a law you can pass that's going to solve what's going on right here. You've heard it from a bunch of different places. You've heard from principals where kids are coming back into school, and is there the separation, as the masks are coming down, the discipline problems are escalating like they've never seen before. you're seeing, I even think Will Smith walking up on that stage and smacking Chris Rock across the face has something to do with the fact we haven't been communicating and speaking to one another as human beings for a while. I think that there is going to be an incredible amount of psychological and emotional turmoil and baggage because of what we've lived through since the early part of 2020. And there's not going to be a law. There's not going to be a subsidy. There's not going to be a housing program that's going to solve this. We have to just inventory it, describe it, let people understand what they're going through and what's happening, because society changed for a long time. Good and bad, we could have that debate. We always do. But I'm just saying reality is we're not the same as we were walking into that because of the separation, I think the depression, all the things the CDC pointed out, I think you can point to the consequences that happen when we are removed from one another
but
and going through
mostly,
what we did.
I don't even know if anyone officially says we're in endemic. I'm going to claim that we're in endemic, that we're done
with the whole pandemic.
We're sort of in endemic. Do you feel like this is a light switch where we can flip it off and kind of go back to where we were? Where we were was not good. I mean, the gun death numbers were bad. But do you think the end of the pandemic will get us back to it, or is this going to be years of fixing?
I think it gives us a spot where we can say, okay, we have to improve. But we have to understand what we're seeing. And what we're seeing, I mean, even people getting hit by cars. There's just all these weird stats that are coming out that
there's
are so much higher than they've ever been before. And I'm telling you, I can't ignore the madness that we lived through since 2020. And so I think that we are seeing a normalcy, and I think we don't have any other choice but to begin to put our lives back together and society back together. But we're going to have to do it with eyes wide open, knowing that we've got challenges with all this that we've lived through. It's real, and we're just going to have to identify it, define it, so people are maybe more conscious of it. But don't look for government to pass a bill or spend money that's going to fix it, because I don't think it's that easy.
So, Mara, is it the gun laws we've been talking about for
decades?
Yeah,
I said that without guns. Why do you
that
keep going back
nice.
To guns? I
because
said everything but guns.
I know, but I want to ask Mara, because Mara thinks about things differently. So the question is,
do you want to hold hands during this part?
Do you need gun laws, or do you go with what the CDC says, and maybe the problems come because people need more housing assistance or more child care subsidies or tax credits and green spaces, of which, not the green spaces, I don't know that we've built any new parks during the pandemic, but I do think that families have probably received more assistance and care during the pandemic than otherwise did. So I don't know if that fixed the problem or if there needs to be
the
more fixing.
The CDC's direction was a little too vague. I mean, it was sort of everything. What I appreciated about it was there what we all keep saying. These are interwoven, they're interdependent, they're intermixed. I sort of agree with Greg. I'm going to start with guns because I'm kind of mellow today about it, actually.
I totally avoided this one.
But I think an important statistic is the greatest percentage of gun deaths were suicide. So that makes sense after the in this year. What attribute, not completely, there were gun violence and street violence, but suicides are becoming more and more problematic. And what we know is if you live in a home with access to a gun, you're 300% more likely to commit suicide. It makes sense on face, right? Mm-hmm. It's you're having a crisis moment and you have access to a deadly weapon.
Yeah.
I do think there might be, this is my only nod to gun laws. Out of all of this, I agree with Greg that it's not a legislative issue, with the exception that we have not, because of the veracity of the gun debate, I don't think in earnest we've talked about suicide. I don't think we've been able to say, is there anything we can do from a legislative point of view? Have we been inventive on it? And it's hard to have, because when you talk about any form of restriction, and in this instance, it could be an insistence that it's locked up. No, it's not perfect. Laws aren't perfect. People will still do it. I think there is a legislative conversation to have around suicide, perhaps. When it comes to the greater issues and the fentanyl issues and cutting really extreme, severe drugs, I agree with Greg. I think that it's a time for leadership, and I really want to look to community leadership right now and not legislators.
That's
because
true.
I want legislators to jump on board. I want my elected official to follow it. But we used to have tremendous other podiums available to us, and we need to see those podiums step up again.
Mm-hmm.
I think one outcome is that we're much more apt to talk about mental health this year than we were 5 years ago. And so
it is an integrated problem. I do think we need marked leadership, but I would like it to be outside of the confines of normal political rhetoric, and I would like some community leaders to bring the politicians along to where the citizens want to go, which is we have to start talking in America about the stress we're living under and that our kids are under. And the stuff that was percolating under the surface really came up during COVID. So I will say it is time for action in my mind, and I think it is time to have coordinated planning. I mean, I will give Greg had a shout out to this when he tried to tackle homelessness a handful of years ago, in which I think your point of view was I got to bring in a lot of people. I just think it won't be led right now by politicians. Yeah. They need to jump on board. They need to show their support. They need to be in the second row, not the first row. So I think we're in crisis and we have to change, but I'm looking for community leaders.
And what I'm learning as I just get older in life, and I'm not a public servant, but I'm just kind of watching what happened, what's going on right now. When government gets involved, I believe, this is my opinion, that if politicians land on what they have been convinced is the solution and there's a funding formula for that, then everybody maps to that. And that is not what you're talking about, Mara, where communities can identify, and it might not necessarily be a funding issue or a money issue, but if you have money that's attached to a certain act or a certain way of doing it, Everybody maps to that because there's money attached to it, and then whether they even think it's right or not, there's dollars available, so you go to that. I would rather see, instead of government coming up with a funding and its theory of what should happen right now, you have community-based, you have your faiths, you have your service providers that are out there.
Business people.
You have business people. I think much of this should be handled in ways where it is not expecting and it is not requiring and it is not dependent on government coming up with a funding model and a program that everyone needs to follow.
Now, I will think there will be a path for government there to support, but it should rather be identified. One of the challenges I find structurally is that I think really good legislation is narrow, because narrow is effective. And when you find very, very vague legislation, it tends to have unintended consequences. So narrow legislation is effective, and yet, as we've already decided and the CDC has decided, this is a complex, intermingled process. Yeah. So you don't start out with the narrow definition. I would like us to have the longer one, and then government can look at it and say, you know what? We could do that. We could do that. And you would find in a way to effectively overlay laws instead of leading by law. You sort of identify it. I do think it's critical, but it'll also require the elected officials to take a backseat and listen for a second. And we haven't done that very much in America lately. We really have. Who has the pulpit? Yeah. Who has the money?
And I think they're human problems, and I think listening is the base of it, whether you're listening to your kids at home when you're otherwise busy, or you're listening to kids at school, or listening to people at work or on the sidewalk. We just really have to figure out that human connection. I know we've had a lot of drug problems in our homeless in Salt Lake, and that's been some of the problems. And speaking of that, I was walking on a street I don't normally walk on. You kind of have your streets you usually go to. Right. And instead of walking on Main Street the other night, I walked on State Street because I was following, I think it was a Planned Parenthood protest that had started at the Capitol, and walked down to Washington Square. And it was a street that I, again, somehow didn't have my eyes open to. It's right by where I work. And I was literally like walking with my mouth hanging open, seeing the drugs, the homeless problems, and the sheer like lack of humanity there, just lying on the sidewalk that people were stepping over on State Street, and it made me sad. So I know it's a problem we've been talking about forever, but I think they're all interlinked, and we've got to figure out what the fix is. And like you said, I don't think money always solves our problems. So I hope we can figure it out, because these numbers are not pretty, and I know that during the pandemic everyone was hopeful that they weren't going up, but...
I think that in real time, while we're trying to figure that out, we have other challenges that are happening in real time as well. So you've got... I don't think there's a border. I think that the human and drug trafficking is happening at a higher rate today than it was happening in past years. I think that is going to have a negative consequence on the country, but even I-15 in that corridor, there's no way we're going to not feel what an increase in human and drug trafficking is going to happen to the country through our state. And I think that's a problem. I think there's a lot of challenges we're going to be grappling with.
Getting a lot
of
our fentanyl from China, too. But I'm going to tell you,
call the shot, understand we're in those tough times, and start talking about it more openly, because it's not all rainbows.
Solutions are achievable, though. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get to the point where I really do believe we've seen communities. San Antonio is doing an amazing job with their homeless. Like, there are programs that work. There are things that work. We are not at the point in Utah at all that the numbers should overwhelm us. We're lacking leadership. leadership. We're lacking multidimensional, and we're lacking people who are willing to take risks and make decisions. I think that's been our problem.
If you see people, if you see a government warehousing human beings, and that's, and they're saying, just let everything go. All rules, you know, no holds barred. We're just going to warehouse you. Here's your section of the world. Go kill yourselves. Go do whatever you're going to do. That's giving up, and that is what we can't do.
Yeah.
And that is warehouse human beings in an inhumane way. We've got to do better than that. And there's a lot that's where they're falling back to. They're just trying to create sections of town or places and just letting it go. And it's not going to go well that way.
I found us surprisingly civil today, I think.
I know.
Is it your cold or is it your...
I'm in a weakened state.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I'm
shocked.
We're
just happy to be with each other again.
It's been a while.
The problems are so big that, you know, we just got to be nice to each other.
It's good.
So we hope if you listen today that you leave this podcast and go figure out one little thing that you can make the world a better place. It doesn't have to be hard. You can smile at someone. You can be helpful to someone that you normally wouldn't.
You could vote Republican. Oh, see, I ruined the big love-in, didn't I? I just ruined it.
I'm happy to vote in your primaries, Greg.
I am happy to vote
in your primaries.
Touche, Mara Carabello, touche.
Does she have to have changed her
of course.
Yeah. When I was 7, I had to have changed it.
When you're 7, if you haven't thought about it before you get into the 3rd or 4th grade, you're toast. Well, I'm glad the band's all back together again. We'll discuss more interesting topics next week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Tell your friends about us, and we will talk at you on Friday.